Hello and welcome. As always, even though that music is from Two Guys Gaming, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series I am reading and reacting to The Poppy War, the novel by R.F. Kuang. As I said a couple of episodes ago, I'm finishing this one in record time, mainly because A, they had already written the summary for me, so I was able to go along with that, and B, we were down on the Cape for a week, and I was able to read and take my notes for the final episodes. This, of course, is the final episode, and I realized that I never used my favorite word, penultimate, in the last episode, so I'm using it here. I will cover the end of the book, chapters 22 through 26, with the summary from Super Summary, and then I will give my thoughts on it, and then I will set us up to pick up with the latest Dragonlance book, Dragons of Eternity, which I already started reading. I should have the notes. And I'm also going to do like one episode a week for that to ease back into it. And then once we get into October with Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, I'll see about if I can increase that to two or if one just works. Now for the summary from supersummary.com. Again, if you want the whole summary with everything, you need to pay for it. That's not me saying that you should pay for it. They're not a partner. I just simply found them and found them to be quite useful here, and I'm giving them their due. Part 3, Chapter 22, Summary. Rin is devastated by Altan's addiction. She has seen debilitating opium addiction her entire life. Ramsa says that after everything Altan's been through, they have no right to judge him. After a fortnight, Rin overhears Chagan and Altan arguing. Altan says Daji gave him permission to free the immured shamans in Chulukorik. Chagan is adamantly against this, as shamans are only interned there after they go mad with unmediated godly power. Altan orders Chagan to obey or leave the Tsika. Chagan tells Rin that Altan is losing himself to the Phoenix. He reveals the source of Altan's power. During the occupation of Nakan, the Federation built a research base near Spear and experimented on Spearlies to understand shamanism. Altan spent half his life in the facility being drugged, tortured, and experimented on. He now hates so deeply and completely that the Phoenix always lives inside him. Rin returns to Altan with newfound understanding of his addiction. She takes his opium pipe and inhales from it. Altan asks Rin to go with him to Chulukorik. She pledges her allegiance to him. Part 3, Chapter 23. The chapter begins with an excerpt about Chulukorik from the Sijin classification of deities. The Grand Marshal of the Heavenly Forces, Erlang Shen, dislikes humans. His twin sister, Sen Shengmu, believes that humans need the gods' help. She lives her life as a mortal, falling in love and having a son. Her brother, enraged, imprisons her in a stone mountain that disables magical powers. This is Chulukorik, the only place powerful enough to contain a god. As they ride into the mountain, Altan tells Rin that Chagan thinks the gatekeeper is in Chulukorik, and that he might know where the warrior is. Altan also tells Rin about the last Tsika who was immured, Phelan. Altan believes that it's possible to bring shamans back to sanity. After 2 days, they reach Chulukorik. Upon entering, Rin feels her magic being suppressed. They find a register of immured shamans, and at the top is Jiang's name. While Rin suspected he was the gatekeeper, so did I, this is her first confirmation. They break Jiang free from his plinth, and Rin begs him for help. Jiang says that if he were to leave the mountain, he'd bring terrible forces into the world. He warns them of the devastation that would come from Altan's plan. He apologizes to Altan for not saving him when he saw Daji turning him into a weapon, but he insists that Rin can still be saved. Rin says she will follow Altan's orders. Disappointed, Jiang seals himself back into his plinth. Altan breaks open Phelan's plinth. He is lost to his god and escapes. At the cave's exit, Rin and Altan encounter Federation soldiers. Without their powers, they fall easily. Part 3, Chapter 24. Rin wakes in a wagon with Altan beside her. Altan tries to use his fire to escape, but they are knocked out again with gas. When Rin wakes again, she's in a laboratory surrounded by jarred and labeled Nakara body parts. She and Altan are in the human laboratory near Spear. Dr. Amichi Shiro enters and recognizes Altan. He injects Altan with heroin, which he says is Altan's favorite drug. He tells Rin that if she refuses to answer his questions about shamanism, he will inject Altan again. Rin doesn't break, and Shiro leaves for the day. Through the night, Altan goes through withdrawals and begs for death. When Shira returns, Rin says she won't sell out Nikan and Daji. Shira says Daji is the one who told the Federation where Rin and Altan were. Altan grows irate, and the guards inject both him and Rin. With the heroin in her blood, Rin finds Altan in the spirit realm. She asks him to give her the key to his power. He takes her back through centuries of Spearly history. The restless and unavenged ghosts of Rin's ancestors fill her with knowledge of their culture. An old man tells her to go to the spear and call the phoenix at its temple. When she and Altan wake, they summon flames that incinerate their bindings in Shira. They make it to the pier but are surrounded by the Federation. Altan tells Rin that he must remain behind to destroy the research facility. His self-immolation destroys the facility and the surrounding army. Part 3, Chapter 25. Rin swims to Spear, haunted by the image of Altan's final moments. She hears the woman's voice in her head, telling her to stay away. She sees visions of the havoc Phelan is wreaking, and of Chagan and Kara breaking a dam to flood the countryside. She also sees a vision of the moment my Renin Tierza refused to sacrifice the world to the Phoenix for the sake of Spear. She sees Jiang emerge in the Stone Mountain. The beach at Spear is covered in bones. A voice guides her to the Temple of the Phoenix. She enters the spirit world and is confronted by Tierza, who warns her fruitlessly a final time. Rin finally meets the Phoenix. She tells it that she wants to end the Federation. It warns her that her choice will result in the death of many. Rin asks it to burn them all, promising an unending river of blood in return. Rin becomes a conduit for the Phoenix. Through her, millions of Muganese people are immediately killed. Rin understands the atrocities she's committed and forces herself to think of her victims as faceless numbers, not humans. Rin drags herself from the temple and collapses on the beach. Part 3, Chapter 26. Rin wakes 3 days later aboard a ship. Ramsa greets her outside her room and says that the mainland is chaos. The Tsika are all aboard, except for Chagan and Kara, who will join soon. They and Kate track the Federation to Shiro's lab, where Kate had the idea to go to Spear. Rin seeks out Kate and asks what she did while on Spear. He brings her to the ship deck and points to the direction of the island of Mugen, where a pulsating mushroom cloud lingers. Rin triggered a dormant volcano. The eruption instantly killed many, suffocated more, and will slowly starve even more. Kate asks if the Phoenix forced her to do it, but Rin asserts that she chose to destroy the Federation. Horrified by her remorselessness, Kate says what she did is no different than what Mugen did to Spear. Rin cannot banish the Phoenix from her mind. She begs Enki for opium nuggets to drown out his voice. Days later, Chagan and Kara return. Rin tells Chagan that Altan is dead. Kara reveals that Altan had her and Chagan break a central levee to destroy the Federation's supply routes, subsequently killing all the local civilians. Rin remembers proposing a similar strategy at the Academy, which both her classmates and Irja found horrifyingly brutal. At dawn the next day, the Tsika hold a spearly ceremony to commemorate Altan's death. Rin tells Chagan about Daji's betrayal and asks if he will lead the Tsika against her and Phelan. Chagan says that Altan named Rin his successor. She and Chagan take hands, united in the atrocities they've committed and their desire for revenge. Rin is secure in her decision and vows to call the gods to do terrible things. Thank you again to Super Summary for that, well, summary. And now for my initial thoughts. First thing I have here is a quote. Your patriotism is a farce. You dress up your crusade with moral arguments, when in truth you would let millions die if it means you get your so-called justice. Patriotism and nationalism are so inexplicably intertwined that you think they are two sides of the same coin. If I'm being honest, I don't understand either. Like being proud of your country? What the fuck is that? You did nothing to be a part of it other than being born. Congrats on hitting that great cosmic lottery. Or not if you end up in one of the highly colonized ones. I hate to bring it up again, but we aren't all born with the same circumstances. And even if we are, we don't all have the same opportunities to improve those circumstances. Now apply that to countries. Why don't they just move? I won't even dignify that with a response. I mean, take something as simple as the Olympics. I was listening to a discussion about Michael Phelps as the greatest athlete of the last 20 years. Someone made the point that he might not even be the best swimmer. He just happens to be the best swimmer out of a couple hundred who have access to the resources that allow them to make it to the Olympics. But I'm supposed to revere them, and Musk, and Bezos because they have the largest bank accounts? Well, until tax time comes, of course. And then, it's all on stock options and bitcoins. Get the fuck out of here. Back to the point, and tangentially related to the Olympics. parenthetically. See, we always get you there, in parenthetical. But not Musk or Bezos, parenthetical. Just wanted to dunk on them again, in parenthetical. I don't understand national pride in either form. Just another way for mouthbreathers who think themselves superior to ride another logical fallacy to that conclusion. Oh, and start unnecessary wars in the name of submission or conquest. Those wars become much easier to wage when clouded by moral ambiguity. And yes, before you libertarians out there start chirping, I understand that morality is subjective and changes over time. There's no true good or evil, etc., just a reaction to it. We get it. You want to fuck teenagers without repercussions. Can we please just move on? One thing that I hope we all agree on, and that could use as a basis for this conversation, is that no population deserves to be called cockroaches, because Rin repeatedly calls the Mugen demeaning things. And the Mugen tactics, parenthetically, along with the prisoner, and parenthetical, use similar language to describe the Nikari. Then, armed with that attitude, Rin says the quiet part out loud. Not literally, but during her internal monologue, she opines, "What does their death matter if they are no more than cockroaches? You can murder as many as you want, with no guilt or conscience." As you might expect, I have questions. Mainly, how does a society get to that point? Obviously, you don't just wake up thinking that an entire type of human are less than. As with most things, I think it must come from ignorance. You don't know any better, and you hear from someone that you trust about these people who attack for no reason. The reason, though, is that you invaded their land, parenthetically, maybe accidentally in parenthetical, and treated it with disrespect. Neither of you speaks the other's language, so you can't communicate your intentions. Tensions boil over, violence breaks out, and a centuries-long hate is born. The hate festers, perhaps stoked by some for personal gain, and war becomes the quote-unquote only option. So crazy to me that it happens. But I've experienced it on a personal level. In one of my first jobs, a manager and I didn't see eye to eye. He ended up making my life a living hell, and eventually let me go. I let my insecurity and disappointment from that grow for far too long. I finally came to terms with it a couple of years ago. Then, this year, I spoke with someone close to the situation, and they explained. He got pressure from outside, parenthetically, something I assumed at the point, in parenthetical. That, in turn, made his life a living hell. And, as they say, shit ends up at the bottom. Misunderstanding, exacerbated over time by miscommunication and malfeasance. Make no mistake, I'm not comparing my situation to genocide. Simply illustrating the similarities, small, perhaps scale to that larger scale. You know me. I try to understand things. I want to make sense of the world. Unlike some, I refuse to simply bury my head in the sand and say, quote-unquote, shit happens. That works as a coping mechanism in the short term. Long term, though, explains nothing and serves no purpose. You are no closer to understanding if you say, quote-unquote, shit happens. And the issue perpetuates. Indulge me for a moment, please. Consider social media. While not strictly in the realm of shit happens, it only allows for similar, simple answers to potentially complex ideas. Why do people vote for, parenthetically, insert politician here, in parenthetical? Clearly they're crazy because everyone else on my newsfeed agrees with me. No attempt to understand or explain. Just this quick dismissal, and on to the next meme, video, whatever. A perpetual cycle of rage and dopamine fueled by you and buying the billionaire class, larger yachts, and jets. Sorry, I just read in a headline that Jeff Bezos lost $21 billion net worth. I'm supposed to feel how about that exactly? Because honestly, I give nary a shit other than imagining what that quote-unquote lost $21 billion could do if injected into the country's infrastructure. I've lost the thread a bit. Not really, but it might feel petty to discuss money in the face of genocide. So, I'll move on. As expected, Rin faces some choices in this section. Each time, she chooses unwisely, in my opinion. I say that with the repeated caveat that I haven't lived her life, and I don't know the depths of her despair. Again, I talk about how fucked up our system is. The truth of the matter is that people are right. It's one of the best out there, for those of us benefiting from it. Moreover, it illustrates how fucked up everything else is. So, my judgment stands, but I understand on some level. She makes these choices in the moment as a young adult, with her anger as her guide. It's easy for me as a middle-aged white dude, who never lived the horrors she has, to say she's doing wrong. But if I put myself in her place, or in the place of Venka, who was serial raped and saw murder and infanticide, I agree. In fact, in the moment, I wanted those soldiers to pay for their actions with blood and pain. Lots and lots of pain. Kill them all. Let God sort it out, as the old saying goes. We all made bad choices in our lives. Not all of them directly led to the immolation of an entire island full of people, but we can imagine what could lead us there. Remember my fantasy of burning down a Walmart? Nobody is immediately hurt, but what about the people that work there and their families? Yeah, suddenly, the strike of a match isn't so satisfying. And to her credit, Kwong wrestles with this some. She talks about consequences of choice. Neither Altan nor Rin considers the consequences for very long. Some of their compatriots are forced to wrestle with them. This serves the dual purpose of illustrating the consequences and showing that your decisions affect those around you. Rin may not care that she wiped out an entire race of people, but those around her sure do. What then? What is your choice when your friend has just done something that goes against every fiber of your being? I mean, I don't know how you redeem someone who committed genocide, especially since she shows no remorse. The actions of the god notwithstanding, I'm with Kate. I leave and I try to convince everyone else to do the same. Don't you stay and try to make them see the error of their ways? Perhaps try to stop them by other means? The life of one versus the lives of many? E.g., would you shoot baby Hitler? First, the answer to that question is almost always yes. Secondly, living through this current rise of despots around the world, most of them seem like figureheads, mouthpieces to say out loud what those behind them won't. So taking them out delays the process, perhaps. I mean, it's taken almost a century to get back here, so there's something. Even so, in the context of the book, parenthetically, and maybe real life, and parenthetical, does killing that figurehead make them a martyr? I mean, not to name names, but people were wearing the equivalent of maxi pads on their ears in solidarity with their boy, and he just got a boo-boo on the ear. Actions and consequences, indeed. I jokingly asked if he died. Would people kill themselves in response? The sad truth is that yes, some probably would. So, along with everything here, and with discretion being a part of valor, I think it best to leave. Lay low for a bit, and try to build a resistance. At least then there's a potential plan for the power vacuum. To me, that makes the most sense. Because the gods might be crazy, but they ultimately don't give a shit about your silly human squabbles. And yet, they regularly allow their power to be used by humans. Witness the Phoenix God that levels an entire island for Rin. I imagine that immortality gets boring, and you'll do anything to gain a follower slash avatar. I mean, I understand the instinct. I've often said that if gods exist, at the very least, they're negligent. But most likely, they just don't give a shit anymore. They loaded up this game of Sims and got bored. Every once in a while, they boot it back up to have their kids' face show up on a piece of toast or a walnut. Maybe light the West Coast on fire. But overall, they moved on long ago. In the world of the Poppy War, the gods just hang out, waiting for some poor sucker to come along. They'd let them have their fun before discarding the remnants. I'm not sure which I prefer. The gods who allow an obsolete algorithm to run things, or those who act like they don't care until they do, and then all hell breaks loose. Option 2 might be fun. Then again, maybe I'm suffering the same psychology of the MCU citizens. Because as I write my final note for the section, Eye for an Eye, Genocide for a Genocide, I have no idea how to respond to a genocide. All I know is that both the Japanese and the Jewish people have gotten the best revenge, so to speak, by living well. I know that oversimplifies both situations greatly. It took decades to rebuild and recover from the horror and the pain. The trauma from both resonate even today. So I don't mean to diminish them at all. But it's true, both cultures are widely revered by large segments of the population. There's another. I don't remember it exactly, but it goes along the lines of only being able to defeat darkness with light. That's probably my favorite for the symbolism, but also the truth behind it. Another more recent and less intense example is the presidential election. Simply that infusion of good mojo seems to have lifted the spirits of so many. However, the rage mongers aren't happy, so I suppose proof of concept there as well. That's why through it all, I hope Rin figures it all out. But more on that in a bit. Keeping score. Not much to celebrate overall in this section. On a more personal note, almost all of my predictions went tits up. The only one I take full credit for is that Jiang returned. And as I thought, he tried to warn Rin off of her path of destruction. He nearly succeeded, but ultimately failed due to her blind allegiance to Altan. However, he was proved right when the god they released escaped to cause havoc on the countryside. Oops, too little too late. Oy. I take some credit for the Tsika prediction. Only Altan died. He sacrificed himself to allow Rin to rise from his ashes as the new commander. That plus the other atrocities she witnessed were enough to break her bad. Initially, Kate tried Lei Zhang and ultimately failed to get her to see reason. It's a driving force of the story, so I get it. But as I always say, I don't have to like it. I completely whiffed on Nisha. Appears to be dead at this point. unless Kwong plans some okey-doke in one of the next two books. He's gone. Still, Kate remains. Maybe. He finally succeeds. Perhaps with Jiang's help. Benefit of hindsight, and a twinge of conscience grows, and she is more willing to listen to their reason. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I can't figure out if I want to do a what's next now or save it for the start of the next book. I was also wrong about quote-unquote Rin's god. Looking back, it's obvious. Of course, a phoenix god requires death in order for a new leader to rise. But I went out on a limb. Sometimes that limb breaks, and you fall on your face. I'm okay with it. Like the phoenix, I will rise from the ash of my error to make many more. Okay. I decided to go with a what's next. Actually, while walking to take my shower during our camping trip, I came up with the idea to make this what I want to come next. What is it about the shower that brings out the best ideas? Mr. Chan said an epic comeback during a conversation. It'll come to you tonight or tomorrow in the shower. Stuck on some question or puzzle? Head to the shower for inspiration. Speaking of inspiration, do people really sing in the shower? Actually, that's a rhetorical question because one of my kids does. So, after all that, what do I actually want to come next? At the top of the list, obviously, I want Rin to see the error of her ways. I don't think she's redeemable. I already said that. You don't come back from nuking an island, no matter how many Hail Marys or Our Fathers. But at least if she's forced to reckon with, really sit on it, and feel the pain of those she murdered, then at least the journey will be worth the destination. I mean, I'm not against the alternative. I just want to know ahead of time if I'm going to eat shit with the protagonist. Otherwise, I feel like I wasted my time. Hey, centuries of Western literature and a likable protagonist are hard to forget. Plus, a good anti-hero is hard to actually write. Inevitably, they just end up the villain. I already said that I want both Jiang and Kate to help her with her salvation. There's an outside chance that Nisha shows up again. Maybe as a vision or apparition to give her one final shot. At what? I already said she's beyond redemption. Gives her a shot at seeing the error of her ways, not causing further damage. Yeah, I think I'm just going to eat shit with this one. Speaking of, now that Altan's gone and Rin is the commander, the Seeker are doomed. I don't care how powerful Rin is, or rather due to how powerful she is, she'll make a tactical error and they're done for. It's only a matter of time. At this point, I won't even hazard a guess as to how it affects Rin. Literally anything is in play at this point. Ideally, there will be a new character at some point. A, because that's the danger of focusing on one character almost exclusively, and two, the world and story are getting bigger. If the story focuses only on Rin, we'll miss a huge opportunity to learn about the motivations of the Federation. Because Kate tries to get Rin to see them as human during his failed attempt to talk reason into her, it'll make for a more layered story. Also, did the Emperor betray them? I'm leaning towards yes. There's a betrayer somewhere in the group. Alternatively, the Federation may just be that good, or the Nakara people are just that predictable. Actually, that might be a more interesting angle. Put an end to the hero worship of Altan once and for all. The Empress already showed herself to be a coward. I know leaders sell it as, quote-unquote, preserving the chain of command, or whatever. It's really just self-preservation, which is fine. But when you ask others to lay down their lives for you, or you refuse to do the same, well, that's fucked. I hope they catch and imprison her. Liked least. Even though I saw it coming, parenthetically, I mean, it was the most predictable thing about this book, and parenthetical, I hated Rin's heel turn. Not the way it was written, not even the events that led to her finally snapping. At this point, it just all feels too clean. She went into great detail about the horrors unleashed in Golan Nis, graphic descriptions of murder and rape. Then when Rin nukes an entire island, parenthetically, I eventually made the connection that makes that metaphor more apt, and parenthetical, all we see is the charred husk of Mugen. Kate, again to his credit, tries to give some detail. Men, women, children. Not necessarily the soldiers that committed those atrocities, people. Very much like the people at Golan Nis, dead. Maybe. In an instant, painless? More likely horrifying and very painful. Heard that dying in lava is like drowning and being buoyed alive simultaneously. So yeah, that sounds awful. Couple of things, Sean. Didn't you say that less detail can be better? Because then the audience fills in the gaps with whatever they fear most. Yes, but that begs the question. Why so graphic with the description of the horrors of Golan Nis? Describing one but not the other feels uneven. When we talk so much about the erasure of history, that's what this feels like. That brings us to the second point. What history? This book is fiction. Ah, yes, technically you are correct. But when fiction tries so hard to stand up for fact, you should still consider how that fiction portrays that history. I mean, you react to how you see fit. This is just my thoughts on the whole deal. And as I always say, if anyone is listening, feel free to get in touch. Happy to have a conversation. What I liked best. I have to go super specific this time. I already talked about liking the writing in the last episode. Then I went on for a bit this time about what I wish Kwong did differently. It's not to say I didn't enjoy the writing in this section. I just didn't like it the best. It feels weird to go super specific on this. Then again, I think the final thoughts this time will take a little more time. I need to reconcile my thoughts about the entire book as a whole. So I think I'm allowed the simple indulgence. Besides, I'm pretty sure you all agree with me. It also probably won't come as a surprise. In all of the overwhelming darkness of the end of this part of the story, one light continues to shine brightly. As I already discussed, Kate attempts to talk some sense into Rin. Granted, Jiang tried too, but her connection to Altan proved too strong even for his influence. So he fucks off and takes a nap. Then, while the rest of the Tsika trip over themselves trying to figure out how to confront her, Kate steps up. He asks her to see reason. She refuses. He implores her to pull her head out of her ass. She stubbornly plugs her fingers in her ears and screams, "La la la!" He further tries one last time to appeal to her humanity. She proves that there's none left right now. And like Jiang and countless others in history, he also fucks off. I already talked some about my reaction to his exit. I only include it here again because it makes me like him more. Standing up repeatedly to power, realizing in spite of his hope how futile it was. Using that to preserve himself and the sanity, and exit stage left. Let me take a minute here. Something just occurred to me. A few of you might interpret that as the same cowardice as the Empress. Fair enough. I obviously disagree, but fair enough. My take on it is that he walked to live to fight another day. How are you supposed to be the change you want to see in the world if you're dead? So, I give him a pass on. Now, though, he needs to make good on this opportunity. Otherwise, you're right, and he's nothing but a coward. Living to fight another day is perfectly understandable and respectable. Running away and abandoning a former friend is not. To quote National Lampoon's Christmas, that's pretty low, mister. If I had a rubber hose, I'd beat you. So yeah, I want Kate to return and give Rin a little of the what's what. Might take a little while to get there, and things will most likely get worse before they get better. That's the nature of these types of stories. But the hope that it happens eventually is enough to keep me going, even if, as I know, will most likely happen, Rin can't be redeemed because she's an absolute monster. At least that'll make up for some of the crap we have to endure because of Rin. And now for my final thoughts. If I'm being honest, my final thought was, I'm not sure what to think. And so I violated my one rule. I went on a Google search. Primarily, I wanted to see if they tried to redeem Rin. Again, I don't mind an unlikable protagonist. I just prefer knowing ahead of time if I'm going to eat shit. So I went to see if I could find some answers without too many spoilers. While I don't often care about spoilers, I want this experience to be pure. Hey, I'm an onion, remember? Initially, my searches led to historical inspirations behind the books. Everyone agrees that Rin stands in for Mao Zedong. I knew the name and some of his history from high school, so I read his Wikipedia page, parenthetically. I know, but it's first my exposure to the guy. And honestly, I learned a lot from the page, in parenthetical. I mean, if it's accurate. From the conversation I had with Liam, the basics are correct. I still need to do a deeper dive on his history and relevancy to China and the rest of the region. But I appreciate Kwong for opening my eyes to a huge blind spot. I'm not making excuses here, because I've had over 30 years since high school, but we don't emphasize other countries' history here in America. Now I really don't have an excuse. I know about the subject and it interests me, so I would do my homework before the next book. Another bit of history that I'm embarrassed took me too long to realize was that Rin's attack on Mugen mirrored the U.S. attacks on Japan during World War II. But as someone made the point, the attack wasn't directly analogous. And as far as I can tell, Kwong may not have intended for that connection. So it's out of context with the rest of the history. I can't find any concrete evidence other than Mugen is a stand-in for Japan. So at least that part matches. The rest depends on your perspective, I suppose. But neither of those represents my big mistake. They simply led me to make that mistake. You see, while searching, results inevitably came up for Reddit. Unlike many of you, I'm not a regular on Reddit. I never saw the utility of the site. I understand that puts me in a very small minority. However, after this most recent exposure, I still feel the same. Admittedly, I recently downloaded the app. Maybe there's hope for me yet. Oh, I remember why I got the app. I've been looking for a daily coding challenge. One showed up from Reddit on the search, so I joined. Also, apparently at some point, I joined an X-Mage group and a Hearthstone group. None of that relates to my mistake either. Just trying to give some history of my own. Remember when I said those who can do, those who can't become critics, those who can't even do that bitch about it on the internet? Yeah, the posts I found on Reddit fell into that third category. Look, you don't need to enjoy everything like I do. I know that people are more discerning in their tastes. I understand that. But I also ask that criticism be constructive. That's why I distinguish between critics and internet bitches. In my opinion, the criticism brought up in the Reddit posts leaves much to be desired. And yet, I read several of them. Each one made me more frustrated than the previous one, because I wanted to see if anyone actually enjoyed the book. Parenthetically, well, enjoy is a stretch, in parenthetical. But I can't think of a better word right now. Actually, in parenthetical. I kept reading. Only recently, I found a review worth paying attention to. Gave many of the same critiques, but they were much more well thought out and stated than anything I read on Reddit. So at this point, here are my final thoughts until the next book. I can't say I enjoyed the book. Hard to say that you enjoy mass genocide, but I respect her writing ability, especially when you consider that she was 19 when she wrote it. I read the writing of some 19-year-olds. It's barely coherent most of the time, let alone on the level to be published. It reminds me of the movie Saw. When I first saw the movie Saw, I thought it sucked. And then I watched something and said that it was filmed in 9 days, and I'm like, this is probably the best movie that's ever been made that was filmed in 9 days. So along the same lines. Or considering that, I forgive her some of the inconsistencies in tone, characters, and story. Someone on Reddit gave that as a reason not to read it. They prefer something with more polish. I don't care all that much about polish. In fact, I like rough edges, even though I heard similar sentiments about the rest of the series. I will reserve judgment until I can read them. Come back in November for book number 2. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us if you haven't already at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I haven't done any articles this week. Last week I did up my past articles. I did quite a few articles actually last week. Talking about my comic book trips and my video game and tabletop past. This week I am going to do the present. I'll do an article most likely on Tuesday and Thursday of this week if you're listening when this is released. Also been updating the Instagram a little bit more. And I actually worked over the weekend to put together some things for the YouTube so that I can start the calendar again, the daily calendar. So that will hopefully come in September. Now that I'm done with this book, I'm going to move on to, as I said, Dragons of Eternity next. I will probably do one episode per week to get through that book by the end of September and October. I'm going to do Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. I might have to fill in something else in there. Maybe I'll do some horror comics or something like that. I don't know. We'll see when we get there if I have to fill in or not, because it's a fairly short book. And then in November, I'm going to do the next book in this series. For anything after that, you can check out the page notes. I updated the schedule through the middle of next year. I will be back at the end of this week with Dragons of Eternity, Episode 1. Look forward to it. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys.